see you. And so it's been a while since I've read here. A little bit of preamble here. So most of the poems I read are sort of based on my own experiences and things I've done in my own life. So this poem is entitled and it's a poem about my own time when I was in Iraq in 2009. This was about two years after the troop surge, and the violence had decreased tremendously. And a big part of that and my experience there in Iraq on my first tour was a tremendous feeling of guilt, that I hadn't been there back in 2007 when the shit was going down and all this bullshit. People, when you get back, they always ask you questions like very voyeuristic, like, oh, you ever see a dead body? What's that like? Oh my God, because they're sort of informed by Hollywood and video games. And so I started writing poetry in 2010 when I got back from Iraq to counter that, to sort of give myself a voice to say that, my experiences are valid. And this is a poem sort of about that, sort of about being in Iraq in 2009. And, even though I know I'm like I wasn't there in 2006, back in the shit, but, it was fucking worse, there's still things going on. And so anyway, I'm going to read a poem now about that experience. It is entitled "Complacency Kills," reads the sign, falling from view behind us as we lumber on through ECPs, where I sign my name Vader and rank of Darth on a clipboard held by a Ugandan with a Kalashnikov slung sincerely but casually over his shoulder. The typical routine of unclipping the harness under my armor, though, that night was interrupted by a red scribble against the sky, like a four-year-old waiting to be beaten who'd made canvases of the walls of his parents' house. The bumping, clanging, wailing metal against metal as we roll along paved roads free of bombs is almost hypnotic, and I lean back, Kevlar unstrapped, and gaze up, weapon not at hand, and my jaw drops as the sea ram jackknifes across the Baghdad skyline, cutting apart space and time, belching out a loud which takes the sound seconds to catch up to our eyes and pops cartoonishly like bubbles midair kilometers away. And I can't see but hope that it's cutting to shreds the occasional mortar rounds and Katyusha rockets found for our little home away from home, where we have dug in and improved our fighting position well after the fighting may seem to have ended. And the older guys, or the guys my age, tell me what it was like back in 04 or in 06 or 03 when there were bombs littered across every street as we sit in front of the green beans after missions, the smell of mocha and diesel fumes forever amalgamating in my mind to remind me of a place where red lines cut across the sky.
Thank you, Phil. Next is David.
I know, I'm starting from here.
My name is David. Very happy to be here. This is a poem or a song, or neither. I'm not sure. I'm not really a singer, but we'll give it a blast. Honey. Well, she ain't gonna sing no song for me. So, what the hell should I sing a song for you? But the sage said that love is like a lopsided shoe. I said, brother, I guess that's true. She got crazy eyes, man. She tell me crazy lies. She got crazy words hanging from her head, but she don't sing for me no more. She's a walking down the road there now, singing her songs to the darkness of the night. But there's she's a-walking on the road there now, singing her songs to the darkness of the night. But there's nobody there, nobody to stare into the vacuum of her eyes. Oh, Mary Claire, now won't you dare, won't you dare now, Mary Claire, like a star from the eyes of a broken lover. Can you hear them call and know them sweet children of the mountain, them bastards of the concrete well? Well, I hope they never live to tell. Yes, I'll meet you there, where the crows pluck the eyes from the men and the dead rabbits adorn the mantle, pieces of your hair. Yes, I read the poems of Plato and the pictograms of the Pharaoh, but the markings of the monkeys in the sand make me understand more than love ever can. Oh, Mary Claire, now won't you dare, won't you dare now, Mary Claire, like a star from the eyes of a broken down world. Well, your silly pen is dancing now, but you don't even know what you're trying to say. You got busloads of rhythm, but you ain't got no rhyme. Well, the night is full of the volcanoes, and the sky is full of darkness. There's earthquakes there now in your cups of tea, and tomorrow, yeah, tomorrow's just another puddle into the day. Yes, I saw her there yesterday. She's a fucking disgrace. She's a drinking pots of turpentine and cider. And the devil, yeah, the devil's taking control of her face. Oh, Mary Claire, now won't you dare, won't you dare now, Mary Claire, like a star from the eyes of a broken down lover. Oh, Mary Claire, now won't you dare, won't you dare now, Mary Claire, like a star from the eyes of a broken down lover.
I I'm just hijacking life for a minute. That's where you go. When I was so busy establishing all my connections to Cork, I never actually thanked Paul Casey for bringing me down to O'Bail and for this wonderful O'Bail that he's been running. So thank you very much, Paul.
Up next, we have someone who's written themselves down as the Cahill.
Sometimes there's a second Cahill. This one I did not write. I did not write this one. This is a Rudyard Kipling poem. It is propaganda. It's about 100 years old. I think we live in an age where we need to work a bit harder to work out what is and isn't the truth. This is a poem written basically when the English Empire was a thing, and you'd think if you own the world, you'd think, well, I'm kind of powerful now, aren't I? But instead, the working class of the English had to be told, no, we're still trucking along, we still need all band together and get as big as we can be. And so this is the kind of poem that someone like Rudyard Kipling would write kind of encourage everyone to keep on building bigger ships, keep on fighting bigger wars, keep on suppressing the Aboriginals and the Indians and the Africans and the Native Canadians and everywhere else. And it was set to music by somebody at some point, I have no idea who. It's called Big Steamers. I see what I can do, I'm not the best at public speaking, as you might be able to tell. Where are you going to, all you big steamers? With England's old coal up and down the salt sea. We're going to fetch you your bread and your butter, your beef, pork and mutton, eggs, apples and cheese. And where shall you fetch it from, all you big steamers? And where shall I write you while you are away? We'll fetch it from Melbourne, Quebec, and Vancouver. Address us at home in Hong Kong and Bombay. But if anything happens to all you big steamers, suppose you were wrecked up and down the salt sea, then you'd have no coffee or bacon for breakfast. And you'd have no muffins or toast for your tea. Then I'll pray for fine weather for all you big steamers, with little blue billows and breezes so soft. Oh, billows and breezes, don't bother big steamers, for we've iron below and steel rigging aloft. Then I'll build a new lighthouse for all you big steamers, with plenty white pilots for to pilot you through. Oh, the channel's as bright as a ballroom already, and pilots are thicker than pilchards at loo. Then what can I do for you, all you big steamers? Oh, what can I do for your comfort and good? Send out your big warships to watch your big waters, that no one may stop us from bringing your food. For the bread that you eat and the biscuits you nibble, for the sweets that you suck and the joints that you carve, they are brought to you daily by all us big steamers. And if anyone hinders our coming, you will starve.
Brilliant. Next, Stanley Nuss. Okay, so this is a new piece, and it's written using song titles. I'm not going to say who yet, but it's probably been more influenced by the American election there and the Brexit. I'm just a little bit fucking confused how all these idiots that are running countries can't seem to understand what people are saying to them when they're voting for things like Brexit and Trump. So I think this is kind of what I think they're fucking saying. Anyway, it's called, at the moment, it's called State of Confusion. Who's fooling whom when the good life is killing time, surviving 9 to 5, working at the yes sir, no sir factory where artificial light, acute schizophrenia, paranoia, blues, hatred and misery, either secondhand. Going solo around the dial that long, lonely yo-yo road of marathon moments, unreal reality, repetition, that tell her, tell him, this is where I, the victim, belong. Scrap heap city where days don't ever change, and when work is over, the brainwashed face in the crowd runs predictable motorway, rush hour blooms and returns to a low budget property on dead end street with ducks on the wall, perfect strangers for a next door neighbor to drift away in alcohol and soap opera glamour, give the people what they want now, and then go to sleep and dream of the £1 million semi-detached. I want it, a house in the country. I want it, a little bit of sunshine holiday. I want it. And voices in the dark saying, you shouldn't be sad. Things are gonna change, something better is beginning. This time tomorrow, you'll get up the ladder of success, become the king of the whole wide world. Until the arrival of daybreak, and the feeling, here comes yet another day, tells him, tells her, it's only a dream, it's only a dream. Is it any wonder ordinary people of fractured minds, mean dispositions, are feeling lost in a space where the good times are gone, and hatred for Mr. Big Man and the party line voices fire a burning desire for a transformation of our world, where the money go round storytellers lie, 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 and the little man is in a little box all day and all of the night. Is it any wonder ordinary people are crying, set me free? Set me free, I'm tired of waiting for you, the members of the club, to reveal yourself, to listen to me, to see my friends as skin and bone, not an unfinished business deal. Is it any wonder ordinary people are crying, come on now Mr. Big Time, be rational, give the people what they want, give me a voice, give me freedom, give me national health, give me education, give me dreams, give me hope, give me love, give me peace on earth, give me a new world.
Thank you, Stan. Next is Rosalind Blue.
Written anything new recently, and if so, it's not finished. So I'm coming back to an old piece. And I haven't done it for a while, and I was thinking, is that one I could do in the slam? Down in the sunless sea, sails disappear behind the horizon. Killing his hope for life. He holds his breath. Strength floats away with the waves. Powers of water and land fight a war. Whispering wind, the voice of earthly spirit, revives the small boy's will. Do not go down to sunless sea. There is no life, no light. Yet only darkness, death's domain. The water god raises his powers, whispers enchantment into the boy's mind. Calm down, let go, don't fear, come home. The lucid beauty in my domain will give you life more than the spirit of the land. Come down, descend to light. surrendering the struggle of his arms exhausts. The boy gives up. Water drags him down. Earthly breath evaporates. Affected by deep silence, he sinks from combat down, perceives no pain, no pressure as he goes. Now he feels beauty, friendly waves around him, warmth and softness, loving friends. His enemies are gone. Inviting whisper of familiar voice allures, and he accepts. Seaweeds caress him in welcome. Deep down beyond the unknown sea, a light waves red. He longs to reach what looks like home, feels an ardent joy, and sinks relieved into the open arms of Mother Animal. Indulged in love, red lights appeal. He hears the voice, divinely powerful. There you are, my son, my hope, fulfilled at length, your home, down in the light of the sea. Thank you very much. And I did this poem because it made me think of the refugees that didn't make it. And if you have a lift for me this Friday to Limerick, I'd appreciate that approach. Thanks.
Thank you, Sue. Next is Ben Kingston.
Hey, this is called the Utopian Poem. Basically, it was the first line is kind of influenced by actually somebody who was against, or at least was like kind of supposedly against the target of this book I was reading, which is Society, Labour, and it was a book by James Conway, and I hadn't lived in 1916 and I haven't actually done one of these yet, so I decided to kind of do a utopian James Conway site kind of thing. So this is James, or at least my interpretation of what James Conway wanted. So, mud and the force of mud, contradictions imbued. With the process of the tools of thought, our world transformed, our chains forgotten, our days enshrined again with the speak of dignity, again with valor of virtue, to reclaim our minds, to be put to the service of all. Affirm ourselves to the breath with easy discussion without fear. When art finds its seat, philosophy ceases to find answers, instead begins to simply ask. Politics no longer a source of disdain, humanity the norm, when a child born for the pain stops at birth. Sorry.
Seamus Harrington.
Time. I'm just going outside, and maybe sometime we glance at one another in dismay. Nobody speaks. Dry-mouthed, I stare at the back door. In moments, our barman returns, rattling his bucket of ice. God's Gable Inn. This is Red Wheelbarrow from Scotland. Lump hammers and chisels ring in the moonlight. Old Norman commission removed in one chunk. Improper Monsignor shedding scant lichen should never be mounted on God's Gable End. Lugged to the causeway while crickets are rasping, dumped in the seaway, don't utter a word. Oh no, gasped mermaid, sheeling a gig. Shiver my lumbers, who are then this? Thank you.
you, Seamus. And next is Patricia Walsh.
Hit and run friends call for speech. The phlogisticated air creeps at your back. God only knowing what the purpose is. Calling out numbers at given times. Getting someone else to do the job for you. Wheel of convenience not giving nightly. Expecting bards of bites to fill the gorge. Fiction dream lines, times not forsaken. Drink between breaks and not inconsiderate. Falling from grace, a casual blip. Marking the page of future blemishes. A nice situation, sleeping at will. Soothing tired youngsters at the small hours. A worthwhile sentiment kicking in. Eating out the quiet diligent sin. Scaling through ancient steps to ascertain God. Praying for the ordinary to ring true. Sarcastic poetics at risk of taking lightly. A simple mess is not all that matters. Hovering over a multitude of light. Recidivism revisited. What could go wrong? An effect for a must begotten, a joy to burn. Along with those rubbishing our own agendas. Pouring down in a live winter, a slight regret. An angel scalded in prime worship. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Sorry, this next one's hard to read. MGN? Oh, that's Mary. Sorry, Mary. great. Next is Philip Spillane.
This one's not about him or based on him, but I had to do a poem about him. I felt like it anyway. This is to Liam, and it's based on the supermoon last night, what I saw when I went outside. And hope you enjoy. Among the deep sea of violet, with its cuts deep, it bleeds clouds. There's a hole in the sky that glows up the whole ground, that glows when you look upon. Smudged on the light bulb are two big paws that look like yours. Forgotten the cold, forgotten what's around, you stare at the great moon bowl. Thank you.
Next is Eugene Crowley.
For reasons only known to themselves, my two sisters didn't attain their 21st birthdays. They and almost everyone else tried to drag me down. The following poem is not what it says in the tin, but a betrayal of friendship. Moonlight. Easier to take the night, the dark out of night, light out of day, green out of grasses, than end our friendship. We cupped our hands and howled at the moon, made green hay honey sweet to me.
Thanks, Eugene. Bernadette Gallagher is next.
Father to daughter. Do you realize there was a war going on? I didn't. Used to being stopped at security checkpoints, Strabane, Auchnacloy. Sounds of war do not stifle a 22-year-old. An Arab friend gently plucks stray hairs from my face, working thread with fingers. High fashion, handmade Burda from Burda patterns, covered for moss with a baye. Five women dressed in black on our way to Gilani Mosque. A letter goes astray to Tehran, but finds me safe on Haifa Street, Baghdad. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernadette. Ray Hanrahan.
One from a long time back, it's called Social Sniping. Two women at a fishmonger's purview the goods and choose. The poor lady turns toward her well-clad neighbour. Inspired, she says, sure, 'tis only a small step from kippers to smoked salmon, no? Both hand over their money, then, fish in hand, walk away in different directions.
Next we have Sue Cosgrave.
I'm just going to read a short snippet from an essay I wrote some years back for the Cork Literary Review. And I wouldn't have liked to read it tonight because of, I must protest that the poem you read, Phil, it was deeply offensive. And I must say that. This poem is about Enheduan, the first poet in the history of mankind to pen her name to a poem. She lived in Ur, southern Iraq, 4,000 years ago. and it's a personal essay. It's called In Search of Enheduanna on a Blue Bicycle. Midnight blue, molded leather saddle inviting a touch. Chrome spokes gleaming on the promise of lightning speed. Mine at last. It was 1970, and my staunch atheist parents, nagged incessantly by an elderly aunt, had given in and enrolled me in the school's communion class. I did my bit and was soon rewarded with a generous handful of crisp new dinars. These were instantly transformed to the bicycle of my dreams. False Christian though I was, I should perhaps have paused to reflect on the strange white-bearded god who wore a dress and lived on a cloud. After all, he had his uses. The Midnight Blue Rally was not my first bicycle. The first one was a flimsy red thing I had outgrown by the time I left New Jersey 2 years earlier. It was more than likely rusting away in a Staten Island dump, even I sped away on the real deal. Perched on the crossbars, my toes barely touching the pedals, I sped down the sidewalk through the commercial end of Carrara in downtown Baghdad. It was early evening, sometime in November. There was a nip in the air, made fragrant with the heady aroma of roasted peanuts and sizzling lamb kebabs. I was 8, willful and reckless. I remember people running for cover as I raced past. A lamppost saved me from plunging into the road at the end of the first block. The rest of the journey home to Attar Street was a blur. Neighboring children chased me down the final stretch, and a vague memory persists to this day of entangling myself in my new bicycle from the clutches of an oleander that sprouted by the gate. It was in this unpromising manner, surrounded as I was by these red-sighted boys and girls who circled me like buzzards, dusty and bruised from my battle with the bush, that I began my search for Enheduanna. Wheeling the new bicycle towards my astonished parents, I was unwittingly embarking on a long journey in search of this Sumerian rebel poet, a woman born not many miles south from where I lived. What separated her existence and experience of life as a woman from mine were 4,000 years and the seismic shift towards monotheism. It was only the next day that the full impact of my actions struck home. Slut, harlot, and other incomprehensible insults followed me wherever I cycled. Ahmed, a bully I had bested at the game of marbles, threw a stone and dented my shiny new mud guard. I spent many tearful nights plotting bloody revenge. A fistfight that saw us both punished. He was led down the street by his mother, who pounded his head with a slipper, while I was ostracizing him further. My parents were oblivious to this drama, as they were to most things that happened in our street. I felt helpless in the face of the hostility unleashed on me by the simple act of cycling. One day, an older girl whispered a garbled exclamation. Marriage, a notion far removed from my imagination, and pretty white dresses were somehow intertwined with the act of cycling, together with something else, unmentionable, secret. It made no sense to me. I'll leave it here and I'll be next. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sue. And to end the night, we have Cedric Picot.
To be honest, I'm meditating between a lightly political piece and a fairly short one, and not one, but I can't really qualify it. I'll go for the long one, but it's entitled to one. One day, they took our place. The next stage of evolution. Life devoid of any, in search for its reminders. One day, they took our face and raised a revolution. Strive by the strength of many that we could not hinder. They were mass-produced, identical at first, driven by purpose, born by greed. Metal and plastic, science-infused, threatened by time and rust. They catered without pause, ordered for all being. Their ability grew as our motivation dwindled. disconnected from ourselves. We gave them our role. So they took over. No fight, no swindle. Set experience away on shelves. Or release anything on the wall. We did this to ourselves, on our way to a safer heaven. We relinquished the meaning of existence, avoiding the place where life itself dwells. Keep our hair shaven. We thought to accomplish something without assistance. In their own endeavor, they might find us, give us another chance, one that our demon can endeavor. To recover our place in the universe where joy and hardship is but dance.